You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Nobody likes membership drives. At KBOO, we envision a community radio future with shorter drives. Help us reduce the duration of membership drives by making your contribution right now before the drive starts. Just go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Together, we can shorten membership drives for good.
Hello, you're listening to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, keeping Portland safe and in touch. Community radio has never been more important than right now. You can donate via the KBOO website at kboo.fm/give. There's also a donate button in the mobile app. But the best way to support KBOO is by becoming a member at kboo.fm/give. KBOO is a nonprofit, listener-supported community resource for people like you. We can't survive without your help. This is Wider Window Poetry, and I am your host, Teal Ansari, bringing you voices you may not have heard from places you may not have been. But first, a word about the places where you are. KBOO Portland is located on land that includes traditional village sites of the Multnomah, Wasco, Cowlitz, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Kalapuya, Molalla, and many other tribes who made their homes along the Columbia and Willamette Rivers, creating communities and summer encampments to harvest and use the plentiful natural resources of the area. Portland is home to almost 70,000 people descended from these tribes and others. As a latecomer to this region, descended from slaves and immigrants, I thank the indigenous peoples of the Portland area for their stewardship of this land. I don't have a guest this month. Instead, I've assembled poetry readings from various sources, so you can hear a number of poets this month reading in their own voices, and I hope you'll enjoy that. It's a lot of fun to do. It's a lot of fun to put together. I'm going to start with a poem of my own, which I don't usually do on this show. This poem is titled Epithalamium for Owned Lives, and epithalamium, you may know, is a poem in celebration of a wedding or marriage. Epithalamium for Owned Lives. Their master gave them permission to marry. He wanted them to be content and work hard. With small children, they were less likely to run. Of course, it was not a church wedding. The master read from the book and gave them each other's hands to hold. He built a fieldstone chimney for their one-room dirt floor cabin. She trained honeysuckle against the walls. In the rich river bottomlands, they hoed tobacco from sunup to sundown. After dark, they carried water for their own little garden. The children worked as soon as they could walk, small fingers gripping tools sized for grown-ups. The oldest son grew sullen and was sold away. Of the cabins, piles of chimney stone remain. Of the history, even the names are lost. Lost the graves of these my ancestors. That was Epithalamium for Owned Lives by your host. The next poet we're going to hear from this month is Richard Blanco, who probably needs no introduction to most of you. He was read the inaugural poem at Barack Obama's second inauguration in 2012. And his personal bio begins, made in Cuba, assembled in Spain, imported to the USA. I like that. Richard Blanco was born in Madrid, Spain, and grew up in Miami, where he received a Bachelor of Science degree in civil engineering, as well as an MFA in creative writing from Florida International University. He's the author of the poetry collections How to Love a Country, Directions to the Beach of the Dead, which was the winner of the 2006 Penn American Center Beyond Margins Award, and also City of 100 Fires, which won the 1997 Agnes Lynch Starrett National Poetry Prize, among others. Richard Blanco is the education ambassador of the Academy of American Poets, in which role he helps to champion the organization's free resources for teacher and student projects, as well as other education initiatives. And I'm going to play two poems by Richard Blanco. One is titled Mango Number 61, and the other is titled Looking for the Gulf Motel, Marco Island, Florida. And he will introduce them himself.
There's the other sort of interesting thing that happens growing up as a child of exiles or of immigrants is they kind of assume that you know all these traditions and that you know the whole history that they never bother to tell you. So one of those interesting little sort of moments has to do with something called la charada, which is a numerology or like a loteria in Mexican-American culture. And it's where every number is assigned a thing, a term. It's kind of like the Chinese, the year of the pig or the year of the donkey, that kind of stuff. Except Cubans have their own, of course. And as a little kid, and my grandmother was a bookie. She was like una bolitera. So she had an illegal numbers thing going on in the backyard, in the back shed. So she knew all the numbers by heart. So as in summer vacation, she'd walk around and she'd see a dead dog and she'd go 42. I'm like, okay. A bird dropping on the windshield, 16. Like, all right. Of course, I never asked, and then I just thought my grandmother was nuts. And then nobody explained to little Ricky what this really was all about. And then I had to go back to that memory in this poem, which is sort of a sweet sort of memory of it, but it's also sort of this sort of idea of how the world was so, you know, alien and familiar at the same time when you grow up between those two cultures and trying to understand everything that came before you. Mango number 61. Pescado Grande was number 14, while Pescado Chico was number 12. Dinero, money, was number 10. This was La Charada, the sacred and obsessive numerology my abuela used to predict lottery numbers or winning trifectas at the dog track. The grocery stores and pawn shops on Flagler Street handed out complimentary wallet-sized cards printed with the entire Charada, numbers 1 through 100. Number 70 was coco, number 89 was melon, and number 61 was mango. Mango was Mrs. Pike, the last Americana on the block with the best mango tree in the neighborhood. Mama would coerce her into granting us picking rights. After all, los Americanos don't eat mango, she'd reason. Mango was fruit wrapped in brown paper bags, hidden like ripening secrets in the kitchen oven. Mango was the perfect housewarming gift and a marmalade dessert with thick slices of cream cheese at birthday dinners and Thanksgiving. Mangoes watching like amber cat's eyes. Mangoes perfectly still in their speckled maroon shells like giant unhatched eggs. Number 48 was cucaracha. Number 36 was bodega. But mango was my uncle's bodega, where everyone spoke only loud Spanish. The precious goat fruit towering in tres por un peso pyramids. Mango was mango shakes made with milk, sugar, and a pinch of salt. My grandfather's treat at the 8th Street Market after baseball practice. Number 60 was sol, number 18 was palma, but mango was my father and I under the largest shade tree at the edges of Tamiami Park. Mango was abuela and I hunched over the counter covered with a Spanish newspaper, devouring the dissected flesh of the fruit, slithering like molten gold through our fingers, the nectar cascading from our binging chins, abuela consumed in her rapture and convinced that I absolutely loved mangoes, those messy mangoes. Number 79 was cubano, us, and number 93 was revolucion, though I always thought it should be 58, the actual year of the revolution. The reason why, I'm told, we live so obsessively and nostalgically eating number 61's mangoes here in number 87, America. One of the interesting things that's happened lately is that I grew up in Miami, and Miami has changed so radically in my lifetime. I mean, I went from, you know, walking with my grandparents, you know, skipping over heroin addicts passed out into, you know, old people just like lined up in the old hotels, to like having martinis and dancing salsa in my lifetime in the same hotels that I used to stay with my grandparents. And even past that, it's just changed so radically to the point that I feel erased from the landscape at times. This poem is not quite Miami, to South Florida in Marco Island, and I went to take my partner to where we used to vacation a lot, and it was poor man's vacation, you know, middle of July, go rent a week in a hotel in South Florida and sweat to death. But I went back thinking, it had been 20-something years, wanting to take that trip down memory lane, thinking this quiet seaside town surely hasn't changed. And it was erased from my memory. And so I found myself in this nostalgic rant, in the same way that I used to remember hearing my parents go, when they would go to Cuba, like, how dare they? They painted so-and-so's house blue, or it used to be green. And like, they would just like this idea of how dare the world change without my permission. In a way, Marco Island became my Cuba in some weird metaphoric way. And this is the poem that resulted. It was a very angry poem at first, and I threw it all away. I don't do angry very well. And I kept one line that repeats. Looking for the Gulf Motel, Marco Island, Florida. There should be nothing here I don't remember. The Gulf Motel with mermaid lampposts and ship's wheel in the lobby should still be rising out of the sand like a cake decoration. My brother and I should still be pretending we don't know our parents, embarrassing us as they roll the luggage cart past the front desk, loaded with our scruffy suitcases, 2 dozen loaves of Cuban bread, brown bags bulging with enough mango to last the entire week, our espresso pot, the pressure cooker, and a pork roast reeking garlic through the marble lobby. All because we can't afford to eat out, mijo. Not even on vacation. Only 2 hours from our home in Miami, but far enough away to be thrilled by the whiter sands on the west coast of Florida, where I should still be for the first time watching the sun set instead of rise over the ocean. There should be nothing here I don't remember. My mother should still be in the kitchenette of the Gulf Motel, her daisy sandals from Kmart squeaking across the linoleum, still gorgeous in her teal swimsuit and amber earrings, stirring a pot of arroz con pollo, adding sprinkles of onion powder and dollops of tomato sauce. My father should still be in a terry cloth jacket, smoking, clinking a glass of amber whiskey in the sunset at the Gulf Motel, watching us dive into the pool, two boys he'll never see grow into men who will be proud of him. There should be nothing here I don't remember. My brother and I should still be playing Parcheesi. My father should still be alive, slow dancing with my mother on the sliding glass balcony of the Gulf Motel. No music, only the waves keeping time. A song only their minds hear 10,000 nights back to their life in Cuba. My mother's face should still be resting on his bare chest, like the moon resting on the sea. The stars should still be turning around them. There should be nothing here I don't remember. My brother should still be 13, sneaking rum in the bathroom, sculpting naked women from sand. And I should still be 8 years old, dazzled by seashells and how many seconds I hold my breath underwater. But I'm not. I'm 38, driving up Collier Boulevard, looking for the Gulf Motel. For everything that should still be, but isn't. I want to blame the condos, their shadows for ruining the beach and my past. I want to chase the snowbirds away with their tacky McMansions and yachts. I want to turn the golf courses back into mangroves. I want to find the Gulf Motel exactly as it was and pretend for just a moment that nothing I've lost is lost.
And this is Wider Window Poetry on KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. You just heard Richard Blanco, former inaugural poet. And our next poet's name is Leah Anderson. Leah Anderson reads her poem, "You Ask Me What I Am So You May Know How to Fear Me."
I see you from across the room with your question mark brows, arms crossed in expectation, head on tilt. Watch you come slinking towards me, and before we've even met, before you've even asked my name, before you've even said hello, what a fine day we're having, you stare at my face like a map you cannot read, like a puzzle with centerpiece missing, like a game you will play and will win. Your eyes, you say, and here comes the grocery store list. Almonds, you say, with a spoonful of mint jelly. Honey, you say, with the zest of a lime. The inside of a Tootsie Pop mixed with green apple pop rocks. What are you? Words so familiar yet sharp, like the pain in the side after running a mile on a full stomach, like an old pocket knife, handle worn smooth in your hand, but still drawing blood after all these years. Well, I say, but already you are gone, turned on your heels, retreating to safe spaces. This is not what you wanted. You want a one-word answer, but friend, this is not a one-word story. There is a child whose ancestors came from across a salty blue sea. She is one half of the world's population. She is multiplying by the second. She is unstoppable. Yet on this soil, she is taught to be silent, to never raise her hand, never make too much trouble, never make herself known. They fear her for the magic she holds between her ears, for the magic of momentum that will not be still. There is a child whose ancestors have always lived here. They crossed borders that were created only out of some colorless man's imagination. Yet within these lines, she is told she does not belong, to go back where she came from, as if where she came from is not where she is, as if her limbs were not birthed on this land, as if her toes have not always known the feel of this earth. They fear her for the magic she holds in soft places, for the magic of her seeds spreading like wildflowers in the spring. There is a child whose ancestors came on ships. They were kings in a land we all came from before we even knew what white was, before we set it on an altar apart and above. Yet here she is told that her scars are too loud, that she must hide all evidence of building a country on her back, that she must be content that things now are better than they have been, though every breath and bullet would tell her differently. They fear her for the magic she holds in the bones of her memory, for the magic of her song that will not lay down quietly. You ask me what I am and hear my words as mutiny, igniting fires you are not ready for in your comfortable home, surrounded by your books and your friends, not even noticing when you look around the room that your skin is all the milky same, that you have learned how to keep out anything that may dirty the walls of your castles, that may challenge the sovereignty of your thrones. And where does this fear come from? We all run when we're scared, or turn with fists up and fight, or drop to the ground to find solace in the earth, or find some sense in the smell of the grass. I can tell you my history in terms of trauma, or laughter, or scars on my knees, or books on my shelves, or the number of times my heart has been broken. I can tell you my history by the things my eyes have seen, but you learn nothing by the shape of them. You ask me what I am and search for safety in the answer. There is no safety here. There is a child whose ancestors came from opposite ends of the earth. They met in the middle in a land where the air is sticky and sweet. She loves Malay and eating ice cream in bed and the way her body feels when covered in mud and in sweat and small living things she can hold in the palm of her hand. She is too young for stillness. She is too old for silence. And her eyes change color with the wind.
And that was Leah Anderson reading her poem, "You Ask Me What I Am So You May Know How to Fear Me." Next poet we're going to hear from is Lawson Fusau Inada, former Oregon Poet Laureate. Lawson was born in 1938 in Fresno, California. He was a third generation Japanese American. His grandparents had founded the Fresno Fish Market. His father was a dentist and his mother was a teacher. And in 1942, Inada and his entire family were sent to internment camps in Fresno and then in Arkansas and Colorado. Inada's collections of poetry include Before the War, Poems as They Happened, Legends from Camp, which won an American Book Award, Just Into Nations, and Drawing the Line, which won the Oregon Book Award. And I'm going to play recordings of two poems by Lawson Inada. One is a Japanese folk suite, which is performed with music. And then there's another poem on here, which unfortunately he doesn't say what the title is. So without further ado, Lawson Inada.
Listen, Akatombo. A woman is singing. Listen, Akatombo. A woman is singing. Look, Akatombo, in these blue mountains. Look, Akatombo, in these blue mountains. Look, Akatombo. A woman is picking flowers. Let us sing too, Akatombo. Let us sing too, Akatombo. Let us bloom too, Akatombo. Let us bloom too, Akatombo. Flowers of many colors. Flowers of many colors. Red dragonfly, blue mountains. Red dragonfly. Blue mountains, white snow in the peaks, white clouds in the sky, white snow in the peaks, white clouds in the sky. Listen, Akatombo, look, Akatombo, blue, green, dream. Listen, Akatombo, look, Akatombo, blue, green. And now it starts to rain. and now it starts to rain. Here, Akatomo, come under this tree. Here, Akatomo, come under this tree. Let it rain, Akatomo. Let it rain. Such is life, Akatomo. Such is life, the water of life. The water of life. Already on the horizon, a golden sky. Already on the horizon, a golden sky. Sunset comes and a gentle evening. Sunset comes and a gentle evening. My sleeves are wet, and your wings are shining. My sleeves are wet, Akatomo, and your wings are shining. Far off below, the fields are shining. Far off below, the fields are shining. Far off below, the river is winding. Far off below, the river is winding. A warm breeze blows, Akatomo, a warm breeze blows. Far off below, the village is shining. Far off below, the village is shining. Let us go, Akatomo, let us go. Fly, dragonfly, fly, fly, dragonfly, fly. Sweet smoke in the village, a star in the sky. Sweet smoke in the village, a star in the sky. Children are playing, Akatomo. Children are playing. Women are singing, Akatomo. Women are singing. Men are laughing, Akatomo. Men are laughing. The food is cooking, Akatomo. The food is cooking. Sweet smoke in the sky. A star in the sky. Sweet smoke in the sky. A star in the sky. Such is the life, Akatomo. Such is the life. The stars sing, Akatomo. The stars sing. Crickets shine, Akatomo. Crickets shine. Souls sigh, Akatomo. Souls sigh. Lullaby, 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 lullaby. Lullaby, 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 Akatomo. Let me ride your wings, Akatomo. Let me ride your wings. Let me ride your spirit, Akatomo. Let me ride your spirit. Let us float to the sky, Akatomo. Let us float to the sky. Let us float through our dreams, Akatombo, let us float through our dreams. Good night, Akatombo. Good night. Good night, Akatombo. Good night.
All I wanted was a place to live, how we had always known. Women among huckleberries, tules that teach children of junipers, geese, and sky. All I wanted was to fight, to live, to be left alone. All I wanted was a concession to dignity, our own reservation. All I wanted was our own defeat. All I wanted was to die. Looking into the eyes of my children, the gifted young who wished me in women's clothes, who silently called me white and compromiser, I see the why I am, the renegade I am, the revolutionary I will always be. What land we had, we must have back again. This is the stronghold, the heart, the spirit, the land, the heart. This termination, this extermination, this compromise to survive, the fenced-in barracks still stand beyond the ancient carvings of prisoner rock. The signs are right, the spirit, the land, we must have back again. Those of us still alive, singing assimilation with the flick of wrists, thrive on the sick blood of subjugation here on this very land where we died. Captain Jack will be hanged tomorrow. Instructions to all persons of Japanese ancestry. This is the stronghold, the heart, the molten flow, solidified blood of ancestors. The blood of us is the red tule rope. What are you worth in the eyes of your sons? The blood of us is the red tule rope.
And that was Lawson Inada. You're listening to Wider Window Poetry on KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. The next poet we're going to hear from is Elizabeth Acevedo. She's the New York Times bestselling author of Clap When You Land, published last year, as well as With the Fire on High and The Poet X, all from HarperCollins. And she's going to read a poem titled Iron. And this is part of a podcast from Poetry Magazine.
This is the Poetry Magazine podcast for the week of April 9th, 2018. I'm Don Scher, editor of Poetry Magazine.
I'm Christina Pugh, consulting editor for the magazine.
And I'm Lindsay Garbett, associate editor for the magazine. On the Poetry Magazine podcast, we listen to a poem or two in the current issue.
Elizabeth Acevedo is a national slam champion. She's delivered several TED Talks, and she's the author of the chapbook Beast Girl and Other Origin Myths. Her first novel, The Poet X, has just been published.
Acevedo is the daughter of Dominican immigrants. She told us that while she grew up in a household that celebrated Dominican culture, she had a hard time feeling at home in the color of her skin. She wondered whether or not to consider herself a Black woman.
I think I was trying to figure out where I fit, right? So when I would ask my parents what we were, they would say we're brown or we're Dominican. You know, that they didn't have the language. And so I grew up not knowing what to call myself, and it took a long time to figure out what was the name that I could use when asking myself that question, not even for other people, but just to know who am I from.
Her poem in the April issue is called Iron. She said she wrote it in response to the videos and pictures of Black people dying violently in the U.S. She was struggling with what it means to live in fear and yet to love at the same time.
We can still fall in love and joke and drink wine and play spades and hang out, right? Those things are still allowed, even if we are also carrying fear and grief.
Here's the poem.
And although I am a poet, I am not the bullet. I will not heat search the soft points. I'm not the coroner who will graze her hand over naked knees, who will swish her fingers in the mouth, who will flip the body over, her eye a hook, fishing for government-issue lead. I am not the sidewalk, which is unsurprised as another cheek scrapes harsh against it. Although I too enjoy soft palms on me, enjoy when he rests on my body with a hard breath, I have clasped this man inside me and released him again and again, listening to him die thousands of little deaths. What is a good metaphor for a woman who loves in a time like this? I am no scalpel or high thread count sheet, not a gavel or hand-painted teacup. I am neither nor romanced by the street lamp nor candlelight. My hands are not in iron, but look, they are hot. Look how I placed them in love on his skin and am still able to unwrinkle his spine.
And that was Elizabeth Acevedo reading Iron. Now we're going to hear from Rudy Francisco. Rudy Francisco is the 2009 National Underground Poetry Slam Champion, 2010 Individual World Poetry Slam Champion, and has appeared on TV1's Verses and Flow. He was born, raised, and still lives in San Diego, California. And this is his poem, Drowning Fish.
During the winter of 2015, the residents of Hampton Bay, Long Island, woke up to what they say was the worst smell they had ever experienced. Mysteriously overnight, 1,000 fish had died in the canal. After thorough analysis, they found that the oxygen levels in the water were too low and all the fish had drowned. Upon hearing the news, many had questions like, how does a fish drown? Don't they have gills? Don't they have a fin and a tail? They said things like, aren't they built to survive in that environment? Perhaps this is the best analogy for my depression. This angry deity, this jealous god, this thirsty shadow that wrings my joy like a dish rag, turns every conversation into a conveyor belt that always begins with the phrase, you look tired today. To be honest, getting out of bed has become a magic trick, and I'm probably the worst magician I know. This sadness is the only clean shirt I have left, and my washing machine has been broken for months. When people ask me how I'm doing, I want to say my daughter's 4 years old and I'm still not sure if I'm a good father. I want to say that my dad is being diagnosed with dementia. There might be a day when I walk in the room and he doesn't recognize me, and I've always wanted us to start all over, but I guess you got to be careful about what you ask for. I guess when you pray for something, you have to be a little more specific. I want to say crickets have been known to eat their own wings, and I too have a tendency to destroy what helps me get off the ground. I really want to say that I'm not in a good place right now, but that's not a polite answer. So instead, I pretend it's Halloween, I jack-o'-lantern my face into something acceptable, and I tell others I'm fine until it sounds like the truth. But sometimes there's a help me chain to the ankle of an I'm doing okay. Sometimes I'm fine is the quickest way to say I don't want to talk about it. Sometimes all the oxygen in the room becomes water. I feel like I'm sinking to the bottom, like I'm running out of air, but I made a promise to myself that I won't be another drowning fish, that I will not die in this canal. I heard that if you just take a deep breath and relax, the human body will naturally float on top of the water. So I breathe and I tell myself that it's gonna be okay. I cry, but I tell myself that it's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay, because I know there is a better version of me somewhere in the future. He is staring at this moment right here, and he is saying, Rudy, thank you for not giving up on us. A few days ago, I was reading and I saw a run-on sentence, and I thought, you know, it could have just ended right there. But it found a reason to keep going. I smiled and I said, well, same.
And that was Rudy Francisco with Drowning Fish. You're listening to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. This is Wider Window Poetry. The next poet we're going to hear from is Sonia Ginansaka, who is an international award-winning queer migrant poet, cultural organizer, and social justice activist. They founded some of the first artistic projects by and for undocumented writers and artists, and has worked for over a decade in both policy and cultural efforts Building Equitable Infrastructures for Migrant Artists, and we're going to hear their poem, Calling Cards.
Calling Cards. One. Across oceans and land, working to connect one phone line with another. Like an umbilical cord, these 5, 10, 20 square cards are more than plastic. These calling cards have heartbeats. Two. We survive through phone lines, a cycle of dialing number. On the other line waited abuela. On the other line waited memories. On the other line waited birthday wishes that should have been given in person while eating guava cake. But we were here, and you were there. On the other line, we waited by payphones. We waited for your voice. We waited. That is all we had. My dad waited for you. He still does. Three. How do you dial a loved one when your fingers have worn out from weaving too many memories? When your voice has changed since the last time you saw them in person? Your bones have broken from their absence. Your lips have withered. Your face is the only clue left of what they might look like now. Perhaps it's best not to look in the mirror. Perhaps you are too ashamed of holding on to old memories. Four. I can still hear Abuelita Alegría's voice. Abuelita, ¿cómo está Ecuador? Sí, sí, Abuelita, prometo que regreso. And then a long pause. You hear her shuffling the phone, trying to remember which side to talk from. She's not familiar with this technology. I call it old school. Some call it poverty. Abuelita's gentle voice rocks me back to memories of when she carried me as a baby. My face lays flat on her back. She hangs up, and I lay gripping onto her words, trying not to let go. Never enough minutes. Five. Calling cards don't have heartbeats anymore. They just hang in the store, teasing you. Now dad stops at the bodega for other reasons. His mouth curls up around the rim of the bottle, longing for one more conversation. I think he believes that with every beer, he gets closer to heaven, closer to her, closer to home. And secretly, I wish that was true. Six. The phone goes unused like the passport in my wallet. No more dialing. And his palms rest spaces where my grandma is buried. And even then, the lines on his hands create borders, restricting him from getting too close. Dad wants to hold my hand. But mostly, we look at each other hoping to find comfort. He says that I look like abuela.
And that was Sonia Ginonsaka with Calling Cards. We're going to finish now. Since we began with inaugural poet Richard Blanco, we're going to end with our most recent inaugural poet, Amanda Gorman, who was born and raised in Los Angeles, California, graduated from Harvard University in 2020. She's the founder and executive director of One Pen, One Page, an organization providing free creative writing programs for underserved youth. She has served as the Youth Poet Laureate of Los Angeles and the first ever National Youth Poet Laureate of the United States. And her books include The Hill We Climb, an inaugural poem for the country, as well as a poetry collection also titled The Hill We Climb, and The One for Whom Food Is Not Enough. And I'm going to play two poems by Amanda Gorman. I'm going to end with her poem, The Hill We Climb, actually the performance of it at President Biden's inauguration. But first, I'm going to play a slightly earlier poem of hers titled Believer's Hymn for the Republic, which was a requested performance for the 4th of July. This is Wider Window Poetry on KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Everybody stay safe out there. These are dangerous times. Do the smart thing, do the right thing, and keep listening to poetry.
necessarily something I think that's pessimistic. I think it's actually audacious in the hope that it represents. And so, with that in mind, I wrote this poem. Imagine that there's the Boston Pops behind me, and that we're on the Esplanade and there's fireworks. But it's called Believer's Hymn for the Republic. 73 years ago, to be exact, our founders dared to declare the world's most revolutionary act, a pact sworn for liberty and equality. Out of many was born one people, a teeming nation made of nations, at its very foundation a dream for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Today we gather so that our founders' words do not go diminished, but also so that the work does not go unfinished. For it's not just a declaration of independence, but the everyday declarations of its descendants that make a people equal. It is our right and our role to remember those words scratched on a scroll so we may live them and heal our nation whole. We roll up our sleeves, we believe in the dream, in these American stories, in the glory of the struggle. For it is our struggle that comes our nation's strength, for the lengths we fight for what is right is the fullest measure of our nation's might. And while we cannot shake or cast aside our past, every day we write the future. Together we sign it, together we declare it, we share it, for this truth marches on inside each of us. Americans know one another by our love of liberty, when in fact we are liberated by our love for one another. We understand that a house divided cannot stand, so let us make a pact to be the country that acts as compassionate as we are courageous. In the Declaration's pages, we write a new order for the ages. Out of many, we are one, bright as a sun and bold as an eagle, a nation of all people, by all people, for all people. Let this 4th of July move forth or cry to redeem the dream, as we remember those words forever ignited that we have so long heard and recited, that we are right to stand, but we are revolutionary when we stand united. Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans, and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace, and the norms and notions of what just is isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother can dream of becoming president, only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first, we must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it, because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it, would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze-pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the West. We will rise from the wind-swept Northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the Midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked South. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will, or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KBOO to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kboo.fm to notify us of your plans.
Welcome to episode 12 of Stories with Stella. Today I have a fellow coworker, Haley, who's joining me. And we're going to talk about a smattering of things, including men coming in their pants during lap dances, because it's something not a lot of people will talk about.